Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside Coach Jeff Schmidelkoffer. It is TR and Coach Schmitty on a Thursday night. Jeff, kind of get the days mixed up, you know, during the holiday season. Kind of lose track of exactly what day it is, but we know there's been college football, a lot of it here these last couple of days with the calendar turning from 2024 to 2025. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide and that performance against the Michigan Wolverines in Tampa in the ReliaQuest Bowl. The Crimson Tide caps the season with a 19-13 loss to really a depleted Michigan team down there at Raymond James Stadium. We'll get into that. We'll get into the aftermath. We understand some NFL decisions that have been made here in the last 24 hours. I wouldn't say any of those have come as a big surprise, maybe to you. We'll get your thoughts on that as well, Smitty. But we also have a college football playoff Final Four set now. As we learned just moments ago, it will be Notre Dame taking on Penn State in one of those semifinals. You'll have Texas and a red-hot Ohio State team in the other semifinal. So, Smitty, we're down to four, and just one of those involves the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, and the one that I didn't really think that was going to make it, to be honest. I thought Texas is just kind of
– they tried not to make it. I'll say that. Something about playing in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, maybe isn't so good for Texas, although they'd obviously like to get back there in a few weeks.
Yeah, yeah, that may have been probably one of the best throws that Ewers have made all year in that time and way they picked up the blitz when the
State back brought up. That double A gap.
They did, and they gave
House.
Yep, and he threw it when he needed to throw it. The guy wasn't open yet, and it was, you know, hey, give Arizona State some credit, though, man. Scataboo and the boys, man, they were laying some wood. And
Sam Levitt's a gritty, gutty guy at the quarterback position, you know.
Yeah, they made some plays.
That felt like a tough one for Arizona State, given that they came all the way back, two touchdowns, two-point conversions, 4th and 13. I thought for a minute maybe Todd Grantham had hijacked the coach's booth for Arizona State and dialed up, because Todd likes to bring that double A gap. You know, he'll bring those safeties and run them up through there too. The former Florida and Mississippi State and University of Georgia defense coordinator. But so your thoughts on what we've got left here before we get into Alabama extensively. And we're live. So if you'd like to jump into the show chat out there, jump in, give us your thoughts on the Alabama Crimson Tide, college football in general. You know, it feels almost like retro ball with what's left, because you start at the quarterback position, Jeff, and of what's left, it's not exactly a dynamic group of quarterbacks, right? There's not sort of that dual threat guy. There's not a Jaden Daniels type or a Jalen Milroe or even really a dynamic passer of what we've got left. This almost feels a little bit like 2003 to me a little bit.
Yeah, just processors, right?
Yeah.
Understanding situations.
Managers.
You don't have to have that 4-4 guy back there. I mean, the kid tonight for Notre Dame, I mean, wow. You know, he made some plays, and, you know, they got that 5-yard penalty down there on the 4th down play, and that was a great call with the sprint out and the curl right there. But I think all four teams left. You know, I'm a line of scrimmage guy.
I know you love it.
Even Texas signature is like they're going to let you hang around, but man, they got
so something. Inconsistent.
They are, and I probably the most inconsistent team left in the tournament.
They are. I think Texas and Ohio State in stretches are the most impressive teams that are left, but Texas hasn't been able to match Ohio State's consistency in the playoff as of date. I think you got to say Ohio State through these two playoff games has been clearly the best team. And what we saw in the first half alone against Oregon out in Pasadena a couple days ago was as impressive as anything you'll ever see. I'm not a big Will Howard guy at the quarterback position, but he has been exactly what they wrote the check for in bringing him in from Kansas State. And you know, whatever you think of Ryan Day and Ohio State, that roster, that payroll at Ohio State, it's lived up to it in the playoff. Maybe didn't in the regular season, but in the playoff, it has been what it was supposed to be.
Well, I remember flipping on the ESPN watching their spring game in May or when April. And I said, there's not a better roster in football. No. You can see that. Now, I mean, didn't know what they were going to do with it. You know, right. You never know how this money affects these kids. But, you know, isn't it funny? This 2-3 weeks ago, we were talking about Ryan Day might get fired.
Yeah.
And how Tennessee was going in there. And look at this new format.
Yeah.
Ohio State's not in it in the old Pick Four. No, they're not in it.
He probably is fired, or he could have been fired. Although the president there at Ohio State, he was pretty adamant, you know, through all this that no, he's coming back for another year. So perhaps it wouldn't have mattered. But your point is pinpoint, because with the 12 team, look at the teams that are left that wouldn't have been in it. Pretty much all of them would not have been in it, because Oregon gone, Georgia gone, Arizona State gone, Boise gone. That's your top four seeds right there. The four teams that got the byes, they went a collective 0-4 in the quarters.
Yeah. And like I said, do you see those teams like they used to do it based on if those are the four, like you said, for those four teams are out? Or do you go back and see them like what had been Oregon, Georgia at 2, and then
I don't think Boise gets in at all in the old format.
Exactly. So, you know,
they were overseeded, obviously.
You know, is 12 too many? Maybe, but what? I did not agree with the seedings. I thought the seedings were screwed up. I don't mind the 12, but what it does, it doesn't allow a TCU to back themselves into a national championship game. We all saw that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You're at least going to have to put a couple of wins together to see. You know,
even if you knock off a Michigan like TCU did before getting to Georgia, they would have had to have, you know, validated that in another round against 100%. Quality opposition. I, you know, it kills me because I'm not big on Penn State. I'm not really a huge James Franklin fan. They crap the bed consistently in the biggest moments, really against top 10 competition. You can look at that throughout the years. But when I watch Penn State play football right now, and I think Nick Saban has talked about this too in the last day or so on ESPN. I tweeted this a couple of days ago. They may still go fetal when the stakes get a little bit higher coming up here in the semifinals. But just in terms of how they're made up, Jeff, with your lines of scrimmage that you love so much, two backs that are the real deal. And if the quarterback's going to continue to play like this, kind of like Ohio State, you know, Will Howard's going to play like this, and if Penn State's going to get this kind of quarterback play, you know, it's not all that difficult to see an all Big Ten final with those two.
Yeah, and I would think that both of those teams, the Vegas man's probably going to give them the nod. Yeah. I mean, no, Penn State, and they may have one of the top three players in the country with Walker, the tight end spot. He does so much. And his blocking is just as impressive as some of the balls that he catches. He's a mismatch. The quarterback knows where to throw it to him. Yep. And, you know, that one catch he made there to ice it, you know. And I'll give Boise credit. Now, the Ginty kid, he got my respect the other night.
Hey,
he
real deal, man.
He's the real deal, man. Yeah. And that was just a roster game. But you're right. You know, I just thought that the right tackle for Penn State and the left guard, man, they are mashers. And they just
– and their defensive front and their front seven can go too now.
Yep.
They're not plotters. They're not just two gappers and those kind of guys. They're dynamic, and they have playmakers over on that side of the ball. Now, again, you know, it's James Franklin. It's a James Franklin team. We'll see how they handle it. But, right, I mean, you've already been in this format for two games, and you're 2-0 against, okay, it hadn't been the best competition in SMU and Boise. You can make a statement that they really have faced two group of five teams. But that shouldn't impact their confidence at this point, should it? I mean, that should be a confident football team going into a matchup against a team in Notre Dame that's going to be fine playing the kind of game that Penn State likes to play.
Yeah, I think it's a very favorable matchup for Penn State in the matchup. I think they match up very well against Notre Dame.
I really do too. You know? I think they're a little more explosive too.
Yeah.
They have the potential to be more explosive. And then, like you said, they've got the difference maker on offense, and it's at the tight end position. But those backs too, I don't think they get enough love.
No, they don't. Well, they both had over 200 yards the other day.
And if not for penalties, they lost some big runs.
They did.
And I thought in terms of play calling, they probably didn't dial them up enough, anything. But they ultimately –
I think they get in that comfort zone, right? They get up 10, two possession games, and they just hammer you. They just keep hammering you. Then they pop one to ice it, you know. So
close out games.
Yeah.
Close out games.
Yeah. And they don't turn it over. They don't turn it over either. So we
talked the college football playoff. Eventually, we have to get around to the University of Alabama football team. We kind of talked about this going into the matchup with Michigan, understanding Michigan very depleted with opt-outs. Alabama had some guys out as well in terms of transfer portal guys, but not so much the NFL guys that we've heard from here in the last day or so. Jahad Campbell played in the game. Tyler Booker played in the game. Jalen Milroe played in the game. So how surprised were you, or were you surprised at all? Because this wasn't a game with stakes, to see Alabama come out and perform at such a subpar level on the offensive side of the ball. The defense really just never had a chance. I mean, Michigan was up 16-0. I think their longest drive in that stretch was like 17 yards.
Yeah.
Because the offense was just so friendly to the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah, and I thought for whatever matchup was Michigan loading the box, but it was like they were hell bent on throwing it. You know, it was just like, you know, what they run the running backs 13 times in the whole game. I'm thinking with a depleted front, the two tackles are out.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if it's a numbers game that they look at. You just go, all right, our people are better than yours. Let's go.
Right.
And I thought that put Jalen in some bad. Now, Jalen didn't help himself. Don't get me wrong. But
no.
Some of the stuff that they did was just like, you know, and I just thought the very first series, you got a couple of first down. Punt the football. Punt the football and make Michigan go 80.
Went for that fourth early.
And then it starts raining on their side of the field.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Because right after that, the rain. So I
just felt like if Alabama could have not killed itself in the first quarter and gotten through the rain and just kind of played punt and punt if you needed to, things could have taken care of itself. It may not have been pretty, but I mean, we're talking about Michigan with 190 total yards in the game. Yeah. Alabama would just 260, but boy, the turnovers just so catastrophic. And you know, for Jalen Milroe, that's going to be part of the legacy, especially over the second half of what turned out to be his final season as the Alabama starting quarterback. Now, not all of those turnovers against Michigan were his fault. Obviously, it was hit trying to throw the football. You know, that's been a problem. You had some issues with Caden Proctor going into the game. You know, you think ahead to next season, Jeff, and let's stay on the offensive side of the ball, understanding Justice Haynes not going to be there transferring to Michigan at the running back position, but Jam Miller expected to be back, who was primarily your top guy of those two. You know, we're seeing or hearing that Alabama in the market, maybe even for a transfer portal running back, Rasul Faison of Utah State, according to Pete Nakos of On3 Sports, is taking an official visit to Alabama this weekend. That's pretty interesting, I would say, especially with A.K. Deer, one of the very best running back prospects for the 2025 class, set to enroll with the Crimson Tide. But quarterback, running back, offensive line, you know, I think Jalen Milroe's legacy should be that of a very successful quarterback at Alabama. It just seems like, again, there wasn't a lot of middle ground for Jalen. The highs were incredibly high, man. two wins against Georgia, two wins against LSU, two wins against Auburn, a win over Tennessee. But then the lows were pretty damn low, especially this year.
Well, and you know, there's two sides of this, right? Like you mentioned all those wins. The guy has done, he's represented the university with exactly what you want. That still matters to me. It does.
Right. And it should. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And he's had four coordinators, two head coaches. And I just think he had a ceiling and he reached that ceiling week four.
Yeah.
And then once all the tape got out on what they wanted to do, and once the coordinators realized he couldn't do those things, I think it just kind of flatlined after that. Mm-hmm. But the legacy shouldn't be, I mean, and you know, Christian Miller, I listened to his podcast today. He made a great point. He's like, listen, it's a big difference than when Jalen was there and they had Tua as a freshman.
Right.
There's not a Tua on campus right now. Now he may be coming with this new kid.
Keelan Russell.
But I remember you and Chase and us talking back then when Tua was on campus and y'all would see him practice and he was like, you know, this kid can play. If Ty Simpson could do it, then I would think you'd already see him. I mean, you know, coaches are there every day.
Right.
I just don't know when the bullets fly
against
Jalen. I just think sometimes when they take that first and they set the edge on him.
Right.
That's
when the start is good or was good, that's when Jalen was. And I think you could say this about this particular Alabama team. This was a front running team. As long as things were good, they were good. But it felt like if things took a shift or a sudden change or the start wasn't particularly good, this wasn't team resilient in a lot of ways, Jeff. Maybe there's multiple reasons for that. Maybe they weren't always put in the best position. Maybe this coaching staff was fooled a little bit coming in thinking that, you know what, we don't really need to worry about the quarterback position. We got this guy who started 13 games last year, or I guess it was 13, in 2023. And, you know, we don't really need to open this thing up all that much. That surprised me a little bit coming in. But I'll say this for Kalen DeBoer moving forward and Nick Sheridan, assuming he's still going to be around as the offensive coordinator. They don't owe these guys, they don't owe anybody in this program anything at this point. No. Okay. There shouldn't be that sense of, well, you know, this guy was this a year ago and that a year ago. It doesn't matter now. Now you've had all these guys or most of these guys for a year. So now the introspection moving forward has to be brutally honest in every area of this football program. And that's not to say it's time to clean house. If you're Kalen DeBoer, make total changes to your staff, all those things. No, it's not time to panic. But I also think some coaches error in making the assumption that, well, we'll give it another go this next year and see how it goes. And then, you know, it can pile up pretty quick on you if you're not urgent in your introspection, Smitty. That's my thought anyway.
No, I agree. And it was almost got to the point where there were some opportunities where not necessarily to bench him for the rest of the game, but get him out and get him calmed down, coach him. All right, hey, we got this. And then put Simpson in if he could do it, if he got the hot hand.
Yep.
You know, we've seen that happen before in college football, right?
Right.
Yep. The other day, he needed to be pulled out just to get him.
He was rat trapped.
He was rattled. And that was probably the first time that if you can see it on television, that's the first time I've seen the receivers frustrated. Like there was one time he called Robbie Utes and Robbie Utes didn't even turn around and acknowledge him. Like, you know, there's some frustration in that whole.
You saw it from Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams.
I mean, public
sort of admonishment of a veteran quarterback. You know, that was the biggest disappointment to me, was that it's a 19-13 game. Alabama has the ball in position to win the football game against a depleted Michigan defense. And you got the sense there was zero confidence in that group that they were really going to get the job done. I didn't pick up any confidence. I didn't have any confidence in Alabama getting it done right there. So that's rough when you're talking about a veteran quarterback, veteran offense, and you're going against a depleted Michigan defense.
Well, and it's first and 10 at the 15, 55 seconds left, and you got two timeouts, and you never try to threat with the run. Run the lead play that Jalen broke for 50 right before half.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Run. Yeah. I mean, you can then bang a timeout. I mean, they throw it four straight times and ball game, you know, and I'm like, and two of them wasn't even in the field of play. Out of the end zone.
And for Jalen, the tough thing to watch throughout that game was that he got jammed up, like to your point.
Yeah.
Because there were receivers on crossing routes and over routes. We talked about this after the game, Smitty. He just wouldn't let the football go. No. I mean, he was not going to attack the middle of the field. And that's tough to watch with a veteran quarterback. And you know, it felt like earlier in the season and really into the season, you thought that there had been some progress made in that regard. But in his last start, it just did not happen. And, you know, I don't think the program from Nick Saban's last year at the helm through Kalen DeBoer's first really sustained much of the culture that had been in place. And when I say culture, I'm not talking about DJs at practice. I don't care about any of that, right? No. What I care about is, do you have a chin? And when the game's on the line, how do your guys respond? And I've heard some folks in the aftermath, well, you know, this stuff was starting with Saban. No, that doesn't fly with me, Smitty. Right. Because, okay, after the Vanderbilt loss, if you wanted to try to run that coping mechanism at me, okay, but after you lost to the second 5-plus loss team on your schedule, that went out the window because the old man didn't do that.
No.
He didn't lose to 5-loss teams, 6-loss teams. So whatever you thought about 2023, his last year, the bottom line is they won 12 games, won an SEC championship, okay? So don't associate Nick Saban with what we saw, especially over the last couple of months of this season. Don't do that.
Well, I agree with you. And eventually we're going to get past this point where right now I think there's a lot of catering to players. And at some point, like you said,
that's why Nick got out.
Exactly. And it, like you said, you're going to have at some point, it's got to be tougher and you're going to have a chin. And if you don't want to be there,
right.
Adios. I mean, I just don't know if Coach DeBoer's that guy. Will he do that?
I don't know. I say there has to be brutally honest introspection. And that may mean people you care a lot about and want to see succeed. You know, it may not be the fit. It just may not. There's no one I know that doesn't want to see a lot of these guys, especially the guys that carry themselves in an exemplary manner, like Jalen Milroe, that there's not any people I know that don't want to see those kind of people succeed.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the fit has to work, and it starts at quarterback. So that's where the introspection really has to start too. I don't care if it's Ty Simpson. I don't care if it's Keelan Russell. You need to identify that guy and go with the guy that's going to best fit who you really want to be offensively. And whether that's Ty Simpson, if it's Ty Simpson, great, good. But this whole, well, Ty's waited his turn like Mac Jones. Well, Mac Jones waited his turn in a system and for a head coach who recruited him and could envision him one day, perhaps, being the quarterback at Alabama. Kalen didn't recruit a lot of these guys.
Right.
So, you know, but again, if it is Ty, great. If Ty proves that he's the best fit for this offense and this team moving forward, great. But, you know, Ty didn't wait his turn in Kalen DeBoer's offense or in Kalen DeBoer's program. He did part of that in Nick's program. So this isn't Mac Jones all over again.
No, and I agree with you. And I think a lot of it too, Trav, is that this whole portal thing, I think some of these coaches are scared. They're scared to coach them. I mean, you know, and be honest with them, because they're worried about it. They hurt their feelings. They'll leave. And
yeah,
you know,
oh, the portal is totally
changed. You know,
and so when I say the culture, I'm not really even as much on the shift from Saban to DeBoer. I do think that's part of it. It's college football culture in general. Yeah. Going back to the last 3 or 4 years, it's entirely different, which is, again, why in large part Nick Saban is, you know, on ESPN and not coaching Alabama anymore these days. But so what do you think in terms of the to-do list for Kalen DeBoer moving forward from a coach's perspective, watching what you watched, Smitty, this season? Where does it have to start for him?
Well, I mean, he's an offensive guy, right? So it's got to start on that side of the ball, because that was where the struggles were. I thought the defense showed some improvement this year, but I think you start from the center out, man, and go, okay, evaluate it, you know, because that, you know, and we're talking about it tonight. You know, we've got these massive offensive linemen, and they can't move. I mean, people are you know, when at Washington, you know, Brailsford came from Washington. He's not a very big guy. He's probably fundamentally the best guy.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
That's what he wants. He doesn't want 360 at left tackle. I mean, if you watch Washington in 2023, that offensive line with Rosengarten and Brailsford, that wasn't like what we saw at Alabama. Now, Tyler Booker's going to play in the NFL a long time, okay? I mean, we're not really talking as much about that. But I think it's a huge offseason for Caden Proctor. I know a lot of people have already said, oh, he's three and out. I don't see it right now. I think it killed him last offseason. The whole bull stuff with Alabama to Iowa back out. Because he needed that offseason in spring after his freshman season, Smitty, more than anybody. And he really didn't get it.
Right.
And so now, you know, and now he's got a shoulder. So does that have to be repaired? What does that do to him for the offseason program? Those type of things, you know, that you take into account.
Well, we've talked about this too, and I don't know. There's a lot of extra weight around the midsection of some of these guys, offensively and defensively.
And it seemed like it got bigger as the season went on. Guys got bigger, it seemed like.
Yeah, tonight, you know, they kept talking about how Georgia's, you know, they're the same way. I mean, they're 340. They outmanned Notre Dame tonight by 50 pounds a guy, but they can't. They can't block them. They can't move. And it's just like, you know, Kirby loves big people. Kirby's like, that's his thing. He likes, you know, but I don't know, man. That's where I start. You know, I'm an off line of scrimmage guy. And we got the dudes on the outside. But, you know, like yesterday, you know, Oots gets beat off the corner fire, you know. Yeah. And it looked to me that it was just, we're just slow. I think we just need to trim down a little bit. And if you're not going to play, because they're running outside zone, they'll run some gap schemes. So, but it's like, if you're going to get out there and run, look at the old linemen in the NFL now. They're all 6'6", 315, and they can move. You know, you don't see 370-pound guys in the NFL anymore. You know,
I think this is where you do give DeBoer a bit of a pass because of the timing of when he got in last year, right? And you kind of got what you got, and you're just in sort of survival mode with your roster too. Not just in terms of trying to re-recruit guys to stay, but then the pieces you're adding and, you know, is this what's really your approach to strength and conditioning and nutrition and, you know, all those things that add up. So, you would think now with time as a something that DeBoer's benefited from, that won't be as much of an issue. I would anticipate spring, summer, getting into next August, this football team looking a lot different too, with an emphasis more maybe on the offensive line and, you know, some of those areas.
I agree. And I think, I mean, it starts, I mean, yeah, the equipment manager, when I was there, they on the road, they had shoes. The other day, there was a shoe problem.
Yeah. That,
I mean, that was crazy.
And everybody knew the weather. So that was
right. Somebody, and that's where I think the attention to detail from the previous staff with the head man, that would have never happened. He would have known it when it was coming. He was that guy. And maybe there was somebody there. It just didn't look like it, but, you know, but I mean, I just start with the whole program and say, okay, this is where we're at, because you know that, you know, the fan base. We've been in it a long time.
Yeah.
This ain't going to cut it. You know what I mean? No. This is, it's
that, that's why I say urgency.
Yeah.
Because if you think you're going to kick the can down the road a year or so, ask Mike Shule about that back after the 2005 season when you thought, hey, we won 10 games. Everything's great. Don't really need to address anything. And then a year later, you're out.
Yeah.
Now, it helped that apparently there was interest from Nick Saban, maybe. Sure. To come in there. It's a lot about who you're going to hire. And I'm not, look, I still think Kalen DeBoer can get the job done at Alabama. It's not that. It's just that he needs to be decisive moving forward in every aspect of the program.
100%. And I think he's getting introduced to the pressure cooker of what that job entails. And it is 365, 24/7.
Sometimes has to be the answer to a lot of things that you'd rather say yes to at Alabama.
Right. Yeah. And I just like to see more definitive on, you know, that's your job as a coach. If you see a kid struggling, get him out. You've recruited well behind him. You give the twos reps. I'm not saying have a quick trigger, but you remember back in the Spurrier days.
Yeah.
He would yank you quick.
Yeah.
You know, Terry Dean and all those guys that played for him. Shane Matthews was fifth on the depth chart, you know,
Doug Johnson.
Yeah.
Noah Brandeis. What about Donald Andrews here in the comments, Smitty? He says DeBoer has 1 year, 9-3 next year, and I would see him either gone or on the chopping block. Wow.
Well,
I think there's scenarios, and it's way too early, but if you were going to say Alabama goes 9-3 next year and maybe misses the playoff for a second straight year, I think it's kind of dependent upon how that 9-3 goes down, because an analogy would be for me, Florida this year, because before the season, if you told Florida fans, you're going to go 7-5, Napier's gone. But then it turns out that they go 7-5 and the true freshman quarterback plays his ass off. And now the narrative changes and the perception changes of the big picture because of the freshman quarterback. So if you're going to say Alabama's going 9-3 next year, and you also throw in there, but Keelan Russell is going to jump in there and play really, really encouraging football, that's a different 9-3, Smitty, than a 9-3 like this year, I guess.
Well, I would remind Donald that you're going to Georgia, you're going to South Carolina, you're going to Auburn. You're going to Missouri.
And
the road record this year has been, now, will it be better at the quarterback position? I hope so.
But yeah.
You know, you don't know. So there's parts of me that agree with Donald. I'm just saying I'm with you. Like, you know, in my opinion, Napier may be the coach of the year in this conference. Because
with the schedule that Florida had,
and then he had to go
and
to
the injuries. Person, yeah.
He did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And won a bowl game, you know. So
This is, you know, I think Lumpy Diz makes a good point here too. He says if DeBoer gets fired after another 9-3, Alabama becomes Nebraska. I don't know about that. I think the implication being you start firing head coaches after two seasons where they go back to back 9-3, good luck finding a head coach. I think there is some caution that you have to take there. Bama Girl 2020, I think, makes the point right here. Got to be better on the road. I mean,
100%.
You outlined it. The road games are going to be tough, but it isn't the tough road games that were the problem or the perceived tough road games. It's road games against six lost damn teams.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you can't lose to Vanderbilt on the road. Oklahoma was a 6-16. You know, that's the difference. The old man never lost to those type of teams. I mean, he did, but, you know, I was trying to think about it. From 2008 through 2023, how many five-loss teams did Nick Saban lose to? I struggled to come up with any. So, look, that's everything that I will say this for DeBoer. Everything we're talking about, he signed up for it, right? Yeah. And so you got to give him some credit for that.
Yeah. And I agree with Bama girl. She's spot on. Like if you have got to take care of your business on the road, and there was nobody better. And I know he gets compared, but a lot of people don't remember the Mike Dubose years and, you know, all the way. I mean, Stallings early years.
For the SEC some seasons.
But you, Coach Stallings, you're talking about a team having a chin. They had, yeah. I mean, the old man, that was a tough – his way of doing things was his way, and he was definitive. And, you know, and then you went through the whole process. But I don't think we're there yet. I agree. I think DeBoer needs to get his people in here. But when you get them in here, like you open, every job is open. And then when you and then stick with it. Don't bring in a guy and put him automatically in front of a guy that's been here. Yeah. You know, I that's one of the portal things that I hate. Like they'll get a guy out of the portal and go, okay, well, he's automatically a better than the redshirt sophomore that's been here 3 years.
Yeah.
You know. And you see a lot of that. And I think you lose your fabric of your team.
Dynamic. Yeah, I agree. David Davenport here in the show chat says, everyone thought this was the rebuilding year, but next year is the rebuilding year. They will have to give DeBoer a third year. I mean, I agree. Unless the roof just totally caves in. I don't see it after another 9-3. Again, especially if it's a season where you're seeing signs at, say, quarterback, and you're seeing the fit really start to take place, and there's a lot more consistency, especially on that side of the ball. Because let's be honest, that's why you brought Kalen DeBoer in here, right? In large part, I mean, he's obviously a good enough coach to get you to the championship level as a head coach, but his background is offensive football. And you know, that's what you're going to have to see, I think, in year two to feel comfortable about the future moving beyond that if it is another 9-3 scenario.
Yeah, and that's what the first time we've had one, I guess, offensive coach, head coach since Shula, I guess, right?
Yeah.
18 years, 19 years. So, yeah, he's going to have to, you know, if he's this offensive guy and the quarterback whisperer, that's where, you know, you're going to have to get better play from there. But I don't, like we mentioned earlier, I don't think it's got to be a guy that stands back there 40 plus times in the pocket either. I mean, they get the kid from Utah State, fine. But I mean, I'd like to see Richard Young and Daniel Hill yesterday a little bit.
Yeah. Give them,
it's a bowl game. Give them or third one.
It's going to be a quarterback centric offense.
Yeah. Well,
it just is. It's not going to be a place for a Derrick Henry under Kalen DeBoer. Well, and that's why I think you better get the right quarterback that can stand in there and anticipate and deliver the football. Because that's what it's going to be predicated on, I think.
Well, at some point too, you're going to have to be able to move people. And
I agree.
We saw
situational football. They failed that.
We probably saw a national championship go by the wayside with Bryce because we couldn't get a yard when Wendy. So we got to be really, really careful. I think there's a balance. I'm not necessarily 50-50 guy. If you're running it 65 times, I mean, none of these teams that are left outside of Texas.
It's bull ball.
And that still works, by the way.
Now, you know, Ohio State showing you, though.
Oh, well, they can
do both. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. SK here in the show chat says, hey, Arizona State did it in a year. Come on, SK. I mean, hey, give Arizona State a lot of credit for a hell of a performance against Texas. in Atlanta, but we're not really going to compare that league to what DeBoer's going up against, are we? I guess you could say relative to Arizona State's program and its history. Absolutely. Kenny Dillingham has done a hell of a job out there in Tempe, but little different animal, Schmitty. Yeah. You're working under the radar a little bit, which can help you. You're not under the spotlight either, like you are at Alabama.
I guarantee you it's not the pressure cooker.
No, not even close.
The temperature's higher in Tempe, but not the pressure.
Craig Wooden chimes in, Schmitty, and asks, do you want to build through the portal or through recruiting? How do you see that dynamic work?
I like making the high school kids the majority of it, and then the minority, I don't want to go 100% poor. I mean, look at Tallahassee. I mean, there's your
You don't get it. It makes you wonder about Miami next year.
Yeah,
because they kind of felt like Florida State last year, this year, and now the quarterback Cam Ward moves on, and we'll see what Mario's got. Mario's not exactly a difference maker on game days. I think we've come to learn that. So defensively, we talked so much about the offense, but defensively, you said earlier, you seem pretty encouraged by what you saw from Kane Womack and that defense as the season moved on. It's hard to really put a lot of what happened down in Tampa at the feet of the defense. We outlined it earlier, 16 points in the first quarter, really on about, 50 total yards of offense for Michigan. So that's hard to really – to put now look, fourth quarter when you really needed to stop at 16-10, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're able to go get the field goal, but Michigan got a damn good kicker too. Yeah. What about this defense? Knowing that you were without Malachi Moore, Jahad Campbell's leaving, Deontay Lawson's leaving, LT Overton announces he's coming back. I thought that was some good news for this Alabama defense. Hitting the portal for an inside linebacker too.
Maybe.
What do you think there? I mean, that makes you feel encouraged about what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I tell you, I thought James Smith had a good day the other day. I mean, he's disruptive. So I think LT Overton really, and Keon Keeley, it's about time for him to, where's he been? He was a top 15 guy. We've seen a little bit of him in the this year, but not the snaps that you would think.
It's still been Yonzi Pierre and Quay Rousseau and those kind of guys. That's what you wonder about with Keeley at this point is you've had the coaching change. He was a holdover, and now you start recruiting your guys to come in that have now been there for a fall. And is he able to position himself ahead, keep himself ahead of the guys that the new staff is bringing in?
Right. Right. And I agree with you about, the linebacker spot. Linebacker, we're going to need a little bit of a help there, but I mean,
Justin Jefferson coming back.
Secondary's fine. Yeah. I mean, I think secondary's solid, Hubbard, and Sab coming back, I think you're solid.
Zay Mincy playing a lot here late with Malachi out.
Yeah.
You like the physicality now. Bray Hubbard will tackle you. And yes, I think Zay Mincy has that same kind of mindset. And I like, he's 6'3 guy at the safety position. Corner, I guess we're still waiting on Damani Jackson, I guess. Xavien Brown is a true freshman. Deshaun Jones played a lot of football at the Husky with Devontae Smith moving on. You got Red Morgan to consider there at the Husky. We've already seen some portal movement there in the secondary. So there should be a good bit of returning pieces to go with this defense.
Yeah, and I thought Deshaun Jones probably earned some time next fall because he got us going the other day with the big hit on the fast screen over there. I mean, he got us going, I thought
they were going to hit him with targeting on that too. I was waiting on the review. I didn't think it was, but
Yeah, he ran through that. I thought, you know, Womack over, you could tell they worked on tackling as the year went on. Yeah. They got better. They got people on the ground, lived the next play, you know, limited the big plays. Yeah, Michigan before the Michigan, but, you know, it was just, I think they're comfortable where they're at. I think they got to go get a couple of pieces on defense. I think they may get another D lineman out of the portal. Who knows? But
yeah,
I think all your work, man, has got to go on the side that we've already talked about. I think it's 70-30, 65-35. That's where your work's got to go.
You know, a couple things. Well, one big thing I thought this season for both Alabama and Georgia, not the edge-setting defenses that you're used to seeing. Yeah. From, say, a Kirby defense. Saw it tonight against Notre Dame. Ball spits out, you know, gets to the edge, just more than I was used to seeing. And I know the point was made here in the show chat. Look, you pretty much have had the same system in place at Alabama for the previous 17 years, because whether it was Kirby, whether it was Jeremy, whether it was, you know, anyone at the coordinator position defensively, Pete, it was still Nick's system on defense. And now you've gone through, just watching it, to me, I don't know, you're a coach, I don't know if to you it looked like a pretty radical change from what Alabama had been under Saban. There has to be some realistic viewpoint to what they sort of undertook in making the changes that they did from one system to this one.
Well, it's so crazy is that everybody went to the 3-4 to stop, you know, to set the edge, and yeah, nobody can set the edge. I thought Bama this year was better setting the edge than last year.
Really? Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, we gave up but most people, they'd run right at us, you know,
right,
like Pavia and the option and stuff like that. Now, that's a different animal, right? But
yeah,
but I thought they played the edge pretty good. I thought tonight, Georgia, you know, they don't trust, you know, they got down in the clutch and they just started hitting the edge. That was a good job by the OC for Notre Dame. They just kind of lulled them to sleep, and then they just started hammering right off tackle, and, you know, with jet sweeps and quick pitch and, you know, bubbles over there, and, you know, salted the game away. Well, that 7-minute drive, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you. And Coach Saban, you know, his the last couple of years, the edge was not solid,
right?
And it's rule oriented, you know, you got to trust it, you got to trust your eyes. But, you know, anyway,
does it seem like intent on creating more takeaways in the process in watching defenses like you do, that eye discipline is a bigger problem than it's ever been? That it's like, it's almost like baseball, how no one hits for average anymore. Everyone's just trying to hit bombs.
Yeah.
Do you see that with defenses more today, that they're so intent on taking the football away that they're more suspect because their eyes aren't where they need to be?
I think a lot of it too is the developmental part now in the last 2 or 3 years, where you got guys, you ain't had them in your program. So when you get out there and live bullets, and these coordinators know it, these offensive coordinators know it, they know each other.
They know how to manipulate.
Biggest thorn in Nick Saban's side, we've talked about this, was Gus Malzahn. He was a thorn in Saban's side. I mean, he gave, especially down there, he gave them fits, you know, especially.
Going to see him week one next season.
Yeah.
Florida State on the Gus bus now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's development. I think it's young guys having to play early where they don't have the experience of. And you especially see that in the back end, especially at Alabama. I mean, young guys that they play back there this year. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's just the offenses are so dynamic. You got people pulling, you know, one way on an RPO, and they're throwing the bubble out here. And, you know, it's just so dynamic now with so many moving parts. You better have a good GA getting the clips to the coaches and to the players, because it's pretty – some of the stuff that Notre Dame was doing late was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I thought overall the defense did improve as the season moved on. And again, Michigan with under 200 yards total offense. It was basically what we thought it would be for Michigan offensively. I thought Orji, the backup, would see time because of what Vanderbilt and Oklahoma had done against this Alabama defense. But I thought Alabama handled a lot of that just fine. It's just, boy, taking care of the football, turning the football over, that was just not a friend of Jalen Milroe in this offense, you know, over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and especially in Southeastern Conference play. So it's just going to be fascinating to watch. I think the building blocks are there. Now, there's still the potential for more movement, as we know. You're on record as a big line of scrimmage guy. I'm big on that as well. Right there at the football, Parker Brailsford, you get back, but the guard positions, that's definitely going to be a big thing. It feels like tackle is still going to be something that's high on the to-do list, and that starts with Caden Proctor getting him to a place physically that is more along the lines where he probably would have been if the whole Iowa thing hadn't come up a year ago. You're kind of in that thought process, though, I guess, with the lines of scrimmage and quarterback, obviously, right there at the top.
Yeah, you may want to hit maybe. If Proctor, like you said, if he's going to shoulder surgery, he's going to be out for a lot of that.
And I don't know if he is. I just know if you know this, if guys are dealing with stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, they're
going to bowl games.
Right.
And they're getting something fixed.
They're going to get.
It might be a cleanup. It may not be a torn labrum or any of that type of stuff, but you know how this goes usually, right?
Yeah. Well, but the fact that there's something, because it's the fact that it's getting to us in a report,
right?
There's something going on. Yeah. So yeah, maybe it might be something where you move him to the right side.
Yeah.
You know, and put a little bit quicker guy over there on the left, cause he struggles, you know, and cause you can't leave the tight end all the time. If what you want to do in this offense. So, yeah, I think it starts there. And then, you know, Brett Parker coming back, and then the right guard got hurt again yesterday.
Jaden Roberts,
man. I mean,
I give that guy a lot of credit, though, because he played through stuff all year.
Kind of makes me think of DJ Fluker, the way he moves.
Yeah. He is Fluker like.
Yeah. But I mean, man, he did play. I mean, he just can't stay healthy long enough. So you feel like you got some bodies in there, and then a great class coming in. And I don't know what Ty Haywood has decided yet. Is he still?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure. I thought that had sailed maybe, or maybe it hasn't, but
I don't know. I hadn't seen anything, but the three or four kids they got coming in,
yeah, you
know, maybe pushing for some time too. So,
yeah, it's like I said, you know, I appreciate Kalen. Here's the thing about Kalen at this point. All right. What's the old saying? They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. These guys know he cares, right? I think at this point. I think they know he's the type of coach that cares. But the bottom line is, moving forward, now's when the brutal honesty kicks into play at a place like Alabama. And it's probably not going to land well on some individuals. But you need to do it now, Smitty. I don't feel like I can overstate that. Don't think that this is something you can keep kicking down the road. And again, that's not to say there's, in my opinion, a total overhaul that's needed, but if you have conviction and you feel strong about certain areas of the program that you feel like can be upgraded or need to be upgraded, it needs to happen now, whether that's one area, whether that's seven or eight. You know, don't try to come back a year from now after you went 7-5 or 8-4, and now it's in fuego and you're acting out of desperation. You're not at that point. You can be measured, but you need to be certain and you need to be assertive.
Yeah. And you're at a place where you're going to have the players more than any other place you've been to this point. So the Alabama brand still carries weight. My biggest thing is don't worry about hurting somebody's feelings if you're brutally honest, because the players will know,
right,
if you're making the right decision. They'll know. They may not like it,
yeah,
but they'll know. Now, if you're catering to people, they'll know that also. So
Jim says we wanted brutal honesty with everyone but Milrow. That's crap, Jim. I mean, if you watch this show, what did we say, especially after the Oklahoma game, after the tackle attempt? You know, he needed to be out of the game, at least for a series. So SK says it's unacceptable to not. That's part of this thing, too. You know, with the 12 team now, Alabama fans have grown accustomed to being in the two for years. And then the four, hell yeah. Now with 12, that's not going to sit well if you miss it a couple of years in a row.
I mean, you're like you say, you're one of the top 6-7 programs with your tradition, your facilities, your brand, and it's not like, it's like Kirby. When Kirby came in, Mark Richt, that cupboard wasn't bare there.
Kirby still struggled in year one.
Yes, he did. 8-5.
Lost to my guy, Paul Johnson.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Running that option.
And Vanderbilt. They lost to Vanderbilt that year. Yeah. And South Carolina. So, it's a different era. I think people are trying to compare eras.
Yeah.
They just are.
Even in the last 2 or 3 years, the eras have changed. So
if you can't see college football is different than
right.
Coach Saban didn't have to go through a lot of this stuff.
No. I'm not giving
DeBoer a pass. I'm just saying, yeah, but eventually, you know, honesty, you're right. It's got to come. There's got to be a line drawn and say, all right, this is what we're going to do. And all jobs are open. And you've got, you're three deep with 4 stars and 5 stars at every spot. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets their feelings hurt. That's the way
it seems like more than ever, you got to identify your top 40 to 45 guys earlier than ever. Remember how you use spring off season, spring practice to kind of rep fundamentals and then kind of get guys in position to compete. You know, it may be in spring some, but certainly as you got into the summer and right into fall camp, you know, you might still feel there's 5-6 areas where you've got legit competition in camp. Man, it feels like more than ever, you've got to identify those top 40, 45 guys and be prepared to just roll with them too. And then your next 40 are just guys that are either young that you're recruiting grassroots wise or portaling. You know,
well, and I think a lot of these, being a high school guy, I don't have the luxury of the depth, but a lot of these guys try to predict their performance instead of throwing the kids in the fire and seeing what they can do. Tuesday was a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Throw somebody in the fire so you got tape and see what they can do. It's a meaningless bowl game.
Right.
I mean, they're not meaningless, but you know, you're not in the playoff.
Yeah.
Where's Richard Young? Where's Daniel Hill? Where's your guy? Let him run the ball. You know, just roll those. That's what we did with Yeldon and Lacey. And it was by the third quarter, you were saying no Moss. You didn't want anymore.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. So I just think some of these guys get so stuck on their guys that guys get pigeonholed and they never get a shot. And the players will see that too.
And they'll think, God, what does that mean for me?
I was there when they wouldn't put Sean Alexander in the game because he wouldn't block.
He couldn't pass pro.
But he went for 290 and 2.5 quarters at LSU. You know what I mean? You know, you got to give these guys, and when they're that talented,
right?
You simplify it, let them go play, man. And then when it comes nut cutting time, you put your dudes in there.
Yeah.
You know, and that just builds. If a kid knows he's getting in, he's going to be a little bit more motivated for you, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that for sure.
So,
well, Jeff, Smitty, I think we covered it, you know?
I think so, man.
I think we're both kind of on the same page on kind of where this thing might go or should go moving forward. We'll see, you know? Again, I think Kalen DeBoer can get the job done at Alabama, but I think ultimately it's not going to come down to how much football he knows, or I think those things we've seen already. It's how he takes care of things that might be tough at a place like Alabama. we'll see.
Yeah, all those guys at that level are X's and O's guys. It's the intangibles that separate.
Yep. Yep.
It's the intangibles, the little things, the things that never show up on a stat sheet.
And the problem, too, is you can't just radically change so much that they pick up, the players pick up, that you're full of crap, too, right? I mean, because then you'll lose them faster than you will if you're just yourself, and maybe that isn't the best approach.
Yeah, 100%. So,
well, it's been a fun one with Smitty here on Ryer on YouTube. We're right at 1 hour in. Everyone that tuned in, we had over 100 live viewers at one time, Smitty.
Nice.
Yeah, they all came out for you.
Yeah.
Smitty was on tonight. And so here they come. We really appreciate you folks tuning in. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, we certainly hope you'll hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell. That way you are clued in to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And if you did us with a like, that thumbs up, we'd appreciate that tremendously as well. Smitty, we'll do it again soon, my man.
It's been fun, man. We'll next week talk a little. Well, we got two games, ninth and 10th. Is that right?
Yeah. We'll talk some hoops.
Hoops.
Default name. He's already given it to us. He's given us the Phylon chant here in the comments. Phylon, Phylon, Phylon. Yeah. LeBaron is something else.
He's a dude.
He is flat out a dude. So he also says, we're a basketball school now. Come on now, Default.
Hang in there, guys.
Yeah. Hang in there. We'll try to help you through it coming up here in the next few weeks with Smitty and myself. Again, for Jeff Schmidelkoffer, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. And until next time, so long, everybody.